Money FM 89.3, best of your money. Money and Me on Your Money, only on Money FM 89.3.
My guest today is Swapnil Mishra, head of private wealth over at Crystal AI. We talk about inflation, JD Logistics, IPO, Bitcoin's volatility and more. First up, good morning, Swapnil. How are you?
Good morning. I'm very well. Thank you. How are you?
Good to speak with you. All right. Let's get your views on inflation. It seems like it depends on which headline you head to. If you're talking about whether inflation is still a hot fear or if receding inflation fears are helping to lift equities. On Friday, we saw Asian tech shares tracking NASDAQ gain. Growth stocks, Asian tech stocks rallying on Friday following Wall Street's lead overnight. Investors appearing to temper fears about hot inflation. But as economies reopen, they're grappling with returning to employment at the same time and a run on commodities and goods as well. So are inflationary fears ebbing or are they still hot in your read?
If you have the answer to this question, then it would really help in making investment decisions.
Wouldn't it? Yeah, that's what I thought.
Absolutely. I would say from where we were, let's say a couple of weeks back, mm-hmm. I think the panic button was hit with the April headline numbers, right? So the 4.2% US CPI number was something that shocked a lot of people. And also, you know, combined with the parabolic rise in the commodity prices that we are seeing. And that's where the concern started coming that, you know, will these rise in prices, whether it's base metals, whether it's electrical components, batteries, all of these things will feed into the pricing for the corporates and hence feed into the inflation. So I think that was a real concern. I would say two things that are kind of emerging in the last 2 weeks after that data, which was sometime in the second week of May. One is on the growth front. I think there's some concerns that are coming, part of it coming from even this, you know, this whole new variant of the virus that we are talking about, like, you know, the first, I think, case of the new variant was detected in US in Texas. So I think some element of caution is there that things may not be as you may see some concern. The second thing is even in terms of the lot of the opening of the economy. So some of the data that was feeding in was only because of reopening and it's not going to be sustainable, which means what we are seeing could be a spike in inflation expectation and the long-term trend while it stays intact, but in the short run, we don't see this inflation concern. So I would say based on last week, the expectation is becoming, it's toned down compared to where it was in end April, early May. And now I guess everyone is looking out for the June data because that will be the next marker on the inflation numbers.
Okay, just diving into that June data, where do you think consumers are most likely to notice higher prices though?
I think consumables are the ones. So those will be the ones which will get affected the fastest. Commodity prices directly will feed into it, but I think that, basic oil price and things like that may not be so visible, but consumables, I think, will be the sector which will see it first. Real estate asset prices, we are already seeing it go up. So there, I think there isn't any catch up to be done.
What do you think is the biggest question investors should be asking or looking out for when it comes to inflation right now?
I think for investors who have a significant fixed income holding, which means investors who have a lot of bonds in their portfolios, mm-hmm. should consider from a diversification perspective. But for investors who are predominantly holding equities, I think it's not such a big concern that has to be managed because equities do outperform the bonds. And so you don't have to really go out there and do something, especially in the environment of current environment where there is uncertainty around this thing.
Yes.
So it's not established. So I don't think anyone needs to do that.
All right. Swapnil Mishra is my guest today, the featured voice in Money and Me. He's head of private wealth at Crystal AI. Let's turn to the hot IPO of the week. JD.com expects to raise more than $3 billion US dollars when JD Logistics, that's a delivery arm, its delivery arm when it goes public in Hong Kong in this week. So it's priced it at the lower end of the scale, I understand, near the bottom of a marketed range. Its price shares at about 40 Hong Kong dollars each. I suppose the question I really want to ask is, what is your case for this IPO? Are you seeing a case to buy or a case to steer away from?
I would say a case to watch and not rush into it. Couple of reasons for that. One is, while last year, of course, they've shown some good revenue numbers.
Yes.
I think 2020, before that, they did not have great numbers. The second thing is, I feel there's still a big dependency on the group itself for their revenues. So I think nearly 50% of the revenues come from their own group, which means while it looks good, the overall group needs to function. And I think those concerns are the reason why they are coming at the lower end of the band.
Mm.
And if you then include some of the negative news which is there around this sector today with the cutthroat competition in the e-commerce space, I would watch it rather than rush into it.
Okay, so you're disagreeing with Yahoo Finance. 15 analysts there have a buy rating on the stock, only one has a hold. Are you also looking at JD.com shares? I know they've suffered a sell-off over the past 3 months.
There we are spoiled for choice, right? Everything is there. It's just a question of what you want to buy, whether it's Tencent or it's JDS, Alibaba, whatever. I mean, I think I would rather be in that stock because this I'm personally not very confident about this particular IPO.
Wow. Okay, interesting. Are you into China stocks?
Yeah, I'm a big believer of the Chinese stock.
Growth story. Okay.
Yes,
all right. Just checking in. All right. I'm going to take you on the roller coaster ride that we've been talking about all morning, and that is to do with Bitcoin's volatility and where we're going to land next. So is what we're seeing part of, what we saw the last time there was a peak. So what do you make of Bitcoin's volatility so far? How have you explained it to yourself?
I think apart from observing the volatility and watching it go up and down, what I like to see personally is how banks are reacting to it and what kind of, announcements that they are making. Because to me, the institutional space or the arrival of large institutions in the crypto space will provide the necessary, shock absorbers to the volatility. Because today the volatility is coming in because the number of people in the market, the market players are less, they are unstructured, and in certain cases, there is no visibility. For example, how many people have bought Bitcoin on margin? It's not very clear. So when a correction happens, it's not very clear as to whether it is just people cutting positions or people unwinding allocations or booking profits, not very clear. So institutional presence or increase of their presence in this sector is a good sign. And if you look at what, let's say, UBS has announced that they are entering this, they are planning to provide some crypto solutions to their investors. Wells Fargo is looking at it. JP Morgan is continuing on their exploration around this. So, in fact, I don't know if you read recently, DBS announced that they are going to provide trust services for crypto assets.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all of this is an indicator that while short-term volatility remains, I think the long-term trend of the crypto being an asset class is intact.
Wow, that's the first time we've heard that argument. Very interesting. We saw former U.S. Treasury Secretary Lawrence Summers weighing in on crypto. And he said that cryptocurrencies could become like digital gold. So comparing Bitcoin to gold, that's quite common in the crypto community. But some say for Bitcoin to have a market capitalization similar to gold, its value would need to rise some 14-fold. So what do you make of this idea that, Bitcoin similar to digital gold?
I think it will be something which will get tested, by people who are looking for the kind of stability that these assets provide. So gold has that, and you know, I feel gold is something which has been embedded in our DNA. Mm. I think hardly it's to do with the value of the asset. It's you know, if you ask anybody who's 90 years old also and say, you know, what do you think of gold? The answer will be it's the safest thing.
Right.
So I think it'll take time. It won't happen immediately, and it will not happen in isolation, which means people will see and gain confidence. And that's why the institutional support to this segment is going to be crucial in building that confidence, apart from, of course, the how many folds it has to increase, because actual market size in terms of number of players is still quite small, right? I mean, it's not as if everyone has invested 50% of their net worth in Bitcoin. That's they're far, far away from that.
Are you expecting new regulations to come in?
I think so, definitely. Mm. In fact, I would say the regulations will become the... look at it this way. If you see... I don't know if you've seen the Coinbase conference that's happening, and some of the speakers that they have, Ray Dalio is there, and the Fed governor is there, Lael Bynaert. Now, if a Fed governor is going to be at the conference of Coinbase, I think that's a good sign, because that means the regulators are looking at this asset, they're discussing, and hopefully it will lead to at least a better understanding, which is the first step in the direction of actually doing something. Because right now, I think there is also lack of understanding, you know.
Yeah,
I'm sure people are watching Fed the YouTube videos on how to understand what is Bitcoin.
Yes, those are very, very popular. I mean, some say China cracking down on Bitcoin mining, for example, you know, part of their efforts to deal with financial risks in their ecosystem is going to be the turning point for Bitcoin. What do you think?
I think that, I don't know if it's actually correct, but 75% of the mining happens in China. Mm. And hence, for China, this is a lot more of a risk because, or rather something that they have to see, because if it is the energy consumption is a challenge for them, then they will want to control it at least. So their crackdown is in line with that. I think US came up with another one that above $10,000 of crypto transfers have to be reported.
For tax purposes, yes.
For tax purposes. Mm. So definitely they are bringing it within their... these things will be a negative for sure, especially for people who have been thriving on these loopholes.
And buying on margin, yes, for sure, for sure.
And buying on margin.
So impossible to understand or to guess where Bitcoin is going to land, but, you know, is now a good time to invest as we see it swing 30% lower at some points?
I would say you take a 5 to 10 year view, it is seen as a diversifier, which is how a lot of banks are also looking at it. Okay. And the minute you see it as a diversifier, which means the amount that you would allocate would be really, really small, because even today, the association is that you put the money that you are okay to lose.
Right.
So it's you don't put 20% or 50% of your savings into something like this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So long-term diversifier versus 40% of your portfolio. All right, let's take a look at the Federal Reserve saying that it's going to ramp up its exploration of the digital dollar later this summer. In order to help stimulate broader conversation, the Fed is going to issue a discussion paper that outlines its current thinking on digital payments and the benefits and trade-offs of a central bank digital currency. Now, Powell has said this will not replace cash. A lot of concerns over inflationary fears. Will that lead to a devaluation of the dollar? What do you think of the discussion on the central bank digital currency by the Fed? Timely or overdue?
I think it's overdue. And especially because the way they are looking at it is actually going to benefit people, and hence it is something which was overdue. And probably the arrival of COVID, apart from, of course, being a crisis, it has also brought to surface the challenges that are there in the payment methods. I mean, imagine stimulus checks were sent out, the payments were made in checks.
Yeah, they were. My friend told me she got her check mailed here in Singapore and then had to mail it back to a bank.
Now, I mean, this is something which is for a lot of us in this part of the world, we would consider this a bit surprising that you are still, you know, when was the last time you used a check in Singapore?
Right.
So while this thing is very interesting and important, I think it will serve a purpose in one, improving the exchange, the method of payment. I think that is the first one. And then linked to it, of course, will be the benefit which will accrue in terms of financial inclusion or helping people who are effectively out of the banking system. Because the physical infrastructure needed for digital payments is lesser compared to the physical cash. So I think that's the way I see this as a discussion, which is helpful. Other than that, I think it's the same as any central bank backed currency. So it's not something which is going to compete with Bitcoin. I don't think so.
Ah, okay. You can't compete with Bitcoin because, you know, the primary feature of Bitcoin, it is antithetical to if it is going to be a digitized form of fiat as opposed to a decentralized form of currency. So you see it mainly as something that could revolutionize U.S. economic infrastructure.
Yes. So it makes a strong case where if Biden is focusing on both the physical infrastructure and the financial infrastructure, that then bodes well because imagine the cost it reduces. Today, that entire processing of that check, if they mail, let's say, you know, let's say 20 million checks, the cost of handling that check, the processing, the clearing, all of that is a cost that is borne by the system. And some part of that cost gets transferred to the end user. If you have a digital currency, then you're not changing anything else, right? Central bank is still standing behind providing that, the value to that currency. But to the average consumer, the cost is going down, and that's a huge save. And that's a save forever, right? Because it's not one-time transaction. For all your future transactions, you're going to save. So I think in case of U.S., it is badly in need of something like this.
Mm, and it's going to reduce the cost of global transaction as well, global banking transactions, pretty much.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. Well, before we let you go, as always, we need to know what is on your investor playlist for this week.
Things have been quite stressful, I would say, last few weeks. So much of data, so much happening. And then, of course, we have now, you know, we've gone back to phase two in Singapore. So it's just another day in paradise, I think.
Nice soundtrack for Limbo Land. Good to have you with us, Swapnil. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Swapnil Mishra, head of private wealth over at Crystal AI.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.